This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week, we'll hear from the coach of the CBU men's soccer team praising Team Canada after they qualified for the World Cup. Then, we're going to hear from Alicia McNeil talking to a talented duo of sisters excited to tell us about the release of their debut EP coming up later this month. And then, it's Bill Bradley closing out the show and everyone gets to play. That topic, high school students are submitting their art to the Hawks Dreamfield Society for a special competition. These stories are coming up on the Coast. Starting out with the good sentence, Paul McDougall talks to Dino Morley, the CBU Capers men's soccer coach, after Team Canada qualified for the World Cup in November. Morley has coached the Capers to silver and gold in recent CIS University National Championships.
So, Dino, it's been just the last couple of days. Canada officially, qualifies to in the CONCACAF for to go to Qatar for the World Cup in November. And I wanted to talk to you right away. I didn't want to wait. I wanted to get the enthusiasm and the excitement. So first off, just tell me what you, as a longtime coach, University Capers men's, what you thought like when we qualified and made it official, and then get into what it means for Canada, for soccer in Canada.
Yeah, I think it's been like a train that left the station a while ago, and it just continued to pick up momentum. And I love the fact that no matter where you are in Canada, I think more and more people have wanted to get on that train. And Sunday, seeing 30,000 people in the BMO Stadium flying the Canadian flag. The images of everyone united around the common cause and this sense of belief was inspiring. It was emotional. I just can't speak enough for the way that I believe in the power of sport and what it does. And what an image that was, where you saw people united through sport and through that moment. And I think a lot about the division that's arisen through the pandemic and how it's divided friends and families and communities. Well, that was a moment in sport history that brought the nation together, similar to when Canada hosted the Winter Olympics. I recall feeling the same way, similar to the women winning the Gold Cup. But this is special. It's pivotal. It's a transformational moment, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I could speak in length, and I hope we do, about what I feel this could do for the country.
Yeah, well, let's get into it. Just tell us, your gut feelings, how you feel, what this can do for soccer, for sport, and for the country as a whole. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, I think John Herdman, who I believe deserves so much credit, not just as a coach, but as a leader, a strong, clear communicator, a motivator, an inspirer, who tells people what they want to hear and instills belief in them. And I think after the game, when he said quite clearly that it will change the country forever, and then put the pressure on, Canada soccer and organizations by saying that we have to capture the moment. Leaders and organizations have to capture this to set this country up for the next 20 to 30 years. And I think it's going to do it in many ways. One, first of all, the financial benefits of qualifying for a World Cup is estimated to be in the region of around $15 million right off the back, even if they don't get out of the group stage. And normally, Canada soccer national teams operating on a budget of around $4 million provided by federal government. So right there, you can see the benefit from a financial capacity. I think about America, but since 94, has qualified for several World Cups and has been able to use that money to build infrastructure and grassroots movements, invest beginning of this, with the Canadian Premier League going into its fourth year, with the announcements of the League One for men and women in BC and Ontario, and the opportunity to grow the women's game through these pro leagues, combined with the nation being captivated by what's happening in the sport of soccer, it's going to be powerful. And it's that momentum that Herbman refers to, that we have a responsibility as soccer leaders, as coaches, as organizations to capture this and use it to inspire change in the game and for generations to come. I think another layer to this, Paul, is that the players, young lads, can see that the players have come through the Canadian club systems and have played for Canada and now are going to play in the World Cup. I think of Buchanan, I think of Laren, I think of Azario, all out of Brampton, Ontario, and Davis out of Edmonton, Jonathan David out of Ottawa. So that inspirational piece that young players can look up to and say, we can do this, that instills a new sense of drive and passion in them, which is exciting. And then finally, I think what Herbman hasn't got enough credit for is the way that he was able to inspire and convince players with dual citizenship or other options to come and play for Canada. I think one of our best players, Stefan Estacchio, with a Portuguese background, playing at FC Porto, coming to play for Canada. Ike Ugbo come in, a poacher in the box that gives us a real threat as we get to that knockout World Cup football. It's just been amazing on how this squad has formed. And I loved on Sunday airing the chance for Atiba Hutchinson. And you look at the leadership in the dressing room of a 38-year-old Hutchinson and Bojan in goal at 34, combined with these young lads, Jonathan David and Alfonso Davis, Tejar Buchanan. What a well-rounded squad. And I think now we have a platform for the game of soccer or football to become much more recognized in this country as a serious Tier 1 sport, up there with basketball, up there with hockey, up there with American football, and I think this could be pivotal.
Wow, you couldn't have said it any better. I'd like to talk a little bit about Hutchison and the fact that, so watching the games like in the past number of months, right, and the announcers, and it wouldn't matter if it was the play-by-play guys or Christian Jack, or it wouldn't matter who, but everyone would make a point of, he is probably one of Canada's greatest athletes that nobody in Canada knows of. It's just such a weird thing, right? I mean, because he's been playing away all his career, and he's older, he's 39 now, and then he just delivers, like, every game. That one a few games back where the odd ball, the strange goal went off the back of his head. And it's just like, what a fantastic player and like a leader. And he's still at it, so athletic. Can you just talk about him a bit?
Yeah, when I saw that goal going off the back of his head, and the first thing I thought to myself was, you know what, what an example. The harder you work, the luckier you get. And I think that he has embodied everything about this language that Herbman's used about a new Canada and a new movement and a new belief. And you said he's been unrecognized for years. You know, I've been here a couple of decades, and for me, what shifted the most and what he's benefited from the most has been the vision that Herbman has been able to communicate and install in the players and in a nation. And it's been a change of narrative. The narrative has always been that we're the underdog, but it's difficult, that no matter how hard we try, we get hard done by when we travel to South America, that the refs aren't fair, that all these pieces, and it's always been something that seems to, that we lean on. And Herbman and these players have said, no, We're not the underdog. we believe we can do this. We're going to go and do this. We're going to buy into one vision. We're going to buy into one goal. And they built that momentum by being, you know, unbeatable at the BMO field and turning Canada into a fortress. And Hutchinson has embodied that for me. Whether he needed to play center back, whether he needed to roam in midfield, whether he needed to sit and hold in midfield, no matter what role was asked of him, starting, coming off the bench, covering players that were injured, he says, yes, coach. And he goes and he gives it his all. And so when you have your leaders doing that, working the hardest, committed to the cause, but they put egos aside, that it's not about them, it's about Canada. And then you look at that goal that Alphonso Davies scored where the ball probably should have gone out of bounds. He had no right catching the opposite player, and he closed him down and off he goes. And you think about the goal off the back of Ativa's head. These are pivotal moments from hard work and desire more than it is technical systems of play. And when you combine that vision, belief, hard work ethic and commitment with the tactical knowledge and structure and confidence that Herman's been able to install, you've got something pretty special. And I'm excited to go and watch this team now with this financial investment behind them so that they can prepare for the World Cup, which we've never had before. Get these players together, truly develop them, and get them ready. I think we've got some really exciting times coming for us in the fall.
The story it appears to be about the Hutchison they keep saying is that he wasn't even really planning or considering to play for Team Canada, and Herdman called him up and basically said, I want you to play, I want you to be on the team, and Ativa just said, well, you know, when do you want me there? You know?
Well, you know, Paul, that's the putting value in people part, you know? When people feel wanted, they feel valued, they arrive with a different mindset. And Herman has made it people proud to wear the Canadian jersey, where before players would find excuses not to leave the club, or maybe it was a bit too much of travel or commitment and they would miss games. And Herman has inspired people to want to be part of his vision. And Ativa speaks about that. And Astakio speaks about that. This feeling of pride, this feeling of something special is happening and I want to be a part of it. And I give him credit for that. And I think that's what people can get behind. And I know, as a university head coach, that behind the scenes, recruitment is your lifeline. If you don't have the drive to recruit, if you can't speak clearly and communicate why you want somebody to be here and represent Cape Breton and represent Cape Breton Island, and he's done that, I want you to come in and represent the people of Canada. And he's done it powerfully. He's motivational, and I think you'll see that in the players now. And I thought that the moment on Sunday with them taking the drum and sharing the celebration with all of the fans and Bojan having his son right there next to him, all of it had that feeling of we're all in this together, and we're all on a special journey. And yeah, a lot of credit to them.
I love the thing with the drum with Cavallini there. So they're all there after the win, and they're you know, they got the drum out, and everybody's crowded around it, and everybody's excited. But he's putting his finger up to say, you know, wait, because everybody, the crowd, the 30-plus thousand with the flags are like singing here, O Canada, right? And he wanted to wait for the O Canada to finish, right? It was just such, he wanted to hear that. It was just such a really cool moment, that.
Yeah, and there's been so many, and that's what's happened. The media's captured this. The games now are on mainstream TV. You know, this coverage, this highlights on Sportsnet Central and TSN, and I remember being in Kamloops when the Raptors were going on their run and they won the NBA championship. And I was in Kamloops recruiting, and I was trying to get to a restaurant bar with a recruit, and we couldn't get in anywhere, and I had no idea why, but the whole place in BC Kamloops was packed because everybody wanted to behind the Raptors, who was a Toronto-based team. And that's what's happening here. Is everybody sees themselves in this. It's Canada proud. I mean, the World Cup, the opportunity to go to a World Cup, play against the world's best players, the sponsorship, the TV rights, the new opportunities that come from that are going to be pretty profound.
It's a really big deal, too, because, I mean, with, you know, the 2026 World Cup is going to be, like, in North America between Canada, U.S. and that. So, you know, we were going to be in that anyway, but Herdman didn't. There was no settling for, like, we're going to that. It was always, no, we're qualifying. We're going to be one of the 32 going to Qatar in 2020, you know, late fall there of 2022. We're going to be in the mix. We're going to be one of the best. And not only that, like, in the 2026, it's going up to 48 teams. So there'll be more teams that can qualify. So now we're at the tail end of the 32-team kind of system, right? Which is the hardest thing to qualify for, right? And yeah, every 4 years to be one of the 32 best in the world, it's a gigantic accomplishment for him to have done, you know, over the course of just, you know, a few years, really, to have turned it around.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'll be very honest and transparent. When we hired John Herdman, I felt it was a long-term strategic investment for 2026 qualification, so he could bring young players through, sort of do away with the old guard and bring new players in and build them through experience for 2026. And he has brought young players in, but he's recruited senior players, senior leadership. He's recruited international players. We've got players playing at high levels around the world. Bayern Munich, Club Brugge, Lausk and Lille, FC Porto, Gante. We've got players playing at high levels of football who belong on the national stage. That's a game changer. And the FIFA rankings, I believe I'd have to check. So don't quote me. You can check this for me. I think we may be even ranked around 37th, 38th now in the FIFA rankings.
After that Toronto game, we were 33.
I mean, yeah. Incredible. And what that does is behind the scenes, and I don't know all the ins and outs, but once we have that status of being ranked to that point, it allows our players in Canada to go play in leagues in England, and allows us to bring players from England dual citizenship into our setup. There's all sorts of wins here that we're not even aware of. But the game against Panama, I mean, we're not done. What will Herdman do if we can win that game in Panama and some results go our way? I mean, we can move out of being in pot four in the World Cup draw into pot three and get a much more favorable draw potentially. So, I mean, the story goes on, and it's exciting. I mean, and that draw, let's see who we get. I mean, we're going to be playing some big countries. It's going to be exciting.
The draw alone is exciting. Speaking of recruiting, let's just talk about Herdman himself, and not Herdman recruiting players, but like, who is responsible for getting John Herdman here? Was there a group, or was it like one or two people's idea? Like, this is the guy? How did we end up getting him?
John Herdman was coaching, and you can fact check me on all of this to ensure, but John Herdman was the coaching in New Zealand as the women's national team coach. It had connection to Canada. I'm not quite sure on how and why, whether his wife or family, but he had reason to look at Canada. He became the Canadian national women's coach. And his language, his way he used words, the way that he told inspirational stories about losing with the Canadian women's national team and then turning it around and women winning the gold and qualifying for the World Cup with the women, and the way he you know, embraced Christine Sinclair and the story and the pride he brought around. I mean, Canada Soccer looked at that and said, "No, we need that with our men's program." And so credit to whomever or however those conversations took place, but he's done it with the women, he's done it with the men, and his brother is here in Canada. He's a technical director in New Brunswick, working at the youth level. I think it's just a great story, and I hope we can all get behind it.
Yeah, it's it really is a thing, and you summed it up really well. It's really the beginning. It's the beginning of something totally different. We're moving in we're going into a new phase and a new stage. Like you said, there's going to be an exchange of players that will be coming here. It's going to inspire young people, and they'll want to, the soccer's so big anyway, but they'll want to play more. You're going to see shirts before you know it, jerseys and T-shirts for kids wearing them. Everyone will be wearing them all summer long with these guys' names on the back of them. So how does it play in with you, like being an incredibly successful, university coach? You've got a gold ring you wear from a few years ago, the silver last year. You know, how does this play in for, like, say, CBU and university soccer in Canada in general, for, you know, men's and women's?
Oh, what a great question. My passion, Paul, is sport and sport development. And I say all the time that whatever little role I can play in making football better in Canada, I want to do it to the best of my abilities. I want young Canadian players to want to come into great environments, of which I believe Cape Breton is one of the best. Come in, I want you to develop, get a great education, and have the chance after graduating to go and play professional football in the Canadian Premier League or elsewhere. And now, here it is. These players can maybe go on that pathway, maybe play in the CPL, do well, develop, and maybe get a call-up to the national team. I love Jacob Schaffelberg playing at Toronto FC and getting called up to national team football. Just unbelievable stuff. I love that. And if this helps put Canada more on the map of a football country, football destination around the world, if more people become aware that, hey, it's not just university football opportunities in America, but no, there's a great football nation in Canada, and there's great universities and colleges and professional leagues for men and for women, and there's pathways, and the more that we can leverage that as a narrative, the more that we can push. For me, in my sport of soccer, I can never accept that we're not profiled and marketed at the same level in Canada as other sports such as hockey and basketball are, and it deserves to be. And I hope it is now, and I hope that this is some of the momentum that can help propel the game to be taken seriously, to grow, and for more and more community people to come out and see the game being played locally. Let's watch it on TV. Let's see the World Cup, but come out and see it being played at Cape Breton University and other universities, and understand it and understand the game. Like when I go to a hockey game and I'm asking questions because I don't quite know what's going on about icing and offside. So I want people to leverage that through this World Cup and come out, understand the game, respect the game, and see it flourish more in Canada.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. And I just like our Coast listeners out there to know that, the soccer, I've been a fan for many years. I've gone to lots of the games we have out at the pitch there, at CBU. It's always fun. The games are always great. Yourself, Ness Timmons of the women's, all the assistant coaches, the great players. There's a core group of community fans that are always there. You know, students, some faculty. It's always a fun time. So I think it's going to be great. I think we can make a big deal about this probably at CBU with soccer and all that in the fall because we're leading up into a World Cup thing. So it's just like there's no downside to it all. I think we're going to do well, and I'm going to be we'll probably chat some more about it as the months go on. Okay, Dino?
Paul, thank you very much. I love it. Anything I can do as we build towards hosting the national championships in 2023, and the more we can do in community to connect it all, I'm right here. So thank you so much for this opportunity, for sharing my excitement around what's happening, and thank you for featuring it on your great station. Daddy always said it's a throwaway.
That was Kate Breton's Hearts of Kin and Throwaway World. And since the pandemic, artists have definitely had their ups and downs. Some are taking a step back for a little bit, while others are taking the opportunities to grow. And the Coast is finally able to have artists here in our studio, the new studio here in Sydney, and we are super excited for it. I have a duo who have definitely been busy the last couple of years. Shelley Tobin, Danielle McDonald of Hearts of Kin. Your first time in a radio studio.
It sure is.
Yes.
It sure is.
Yeah. Yeah. Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Throwaway World was just played, of course, which was your amazing first single.
Yes.
When you hear it being played on the airwaves, what goes through your mind?
Oh, my gosh. do you know what the first thing that I think of when I hear it? First of all, just to have our music being played on the local radio is absolutely, it's amazing. The first thing that I think of is my dad. He was telling us, he was in the doctor's office not too long ago, and he said, you know what, girls? He said, I sat in the doctor's office. He said, and all of a sudden, he was listening to The Coast, and he said, Throwaway World came on the radio. He said, and I looked up, and I said, that's my daughter's on the radio. And I just could cry. He's so proud of us. I just thought, oh, it's just, it doesn't.
Don't start
it doesn't
crying
get
now. First 5 minutes in, Shelley. Stay with
I'm
us.
Trying.
Stay with
I'm
us.
Trying. I'm trying. It doesn't get much better than that. So the feeling, I don't know. There's no words. It's pretty cool.
It is.
Where were you the first time you heard Throwaway World on the radio?
I was with my parents. It was the same day that my dad heard it on the radio. And we were listening to The Coast in my mother's kitchen, and it came on again because we've been listening, trying to wait for it to come on. Mm-hmm. And we all danced around the kitchen. Oh. It was super exciting.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Super fun.
Yeah. So let's start at the beginning for Hearts of Kin. How did the duo come about?
Well, we've been singing together our entire lives.
Yeah.
It was only the last couple of years that we decided that we wanted to make a go at it and form the band. And this is when we were still living apart. I was living in PEI at the time. But we just decided we were going to try to make it work through coming home and gigging on weekends that we, you know, could possibly make it work. And moving home has been very helpful there.
Was your main reasoning for family? Like moving home, Danielle?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And ever since we moved away, my husband and I, it's always been a plan to come back home. That was always the plan. So we're right on track.
Your families, you have your own, of course. You have children as well, the both of you, husbands, whatnot. So that's a big thing for everyone to be together, of course, now, right? And that's great.
It's been a
that's
long time great. Coming. We're really loving it.
Oh, gosh.
Where did the band name come from?
That's just basically, we were trying to figure out the perfect name. We're McPhee sisters at heart.
Okay.
We're like, what about
From New Waterford.
Yeah. From New Waterford.
From New Waterford originally. We'll say it that way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that works.
For sure.
That works.
Yeah. Now, you're not twins.
We are not.
And Phil Thompson thought that we were twins, but I mean, like, siblings, harmonies, whatnot like that together. So you grew up singing together.
Yes, we certainly did. Yeah.
Absolutely.
A lot of kitchen parties. Our dad was very musical, and he was playing guitar since we were toddlers, so I guess it was kind of natural for us to start singing together.
So we were, Hearts of Kin was born in the Cape Breton kitchen party.
It was kitchen party.
Yeah.
Were there original songs and gigs prior, let's say, to the pandemic?
Do you know what? There were a handful of gigs prior to the pandemic, but not, I shouldn't say, Danielle had written some songs. And she had a couple of demos on YouTube, but
just a couple of things that I recorded a couple songs here a couple years ago, and then a couple in PEI as well. But this was before the band. This was really prior to the band, so we just kind of took those songs and we're kind of running with them.
Do you think things would be different if the pandemic didn't happen? I like
how,
to think,
how
right?
Can we say no.
I hope not. I hope that we still would have. Well, we would have done this anyway. We still would have went for it. But the pandemic, it kind of slowed things down and let us take that time to write the songs and record the music. And
I think eventually we would. I mean, writing songs and, you know, sharing our original music was something I think that was always, it was always on the back of our mind as something that we wanted to do. But we had actually kind of planned on establishing ourselves as a cover band first and kind of incorporate some original music in there. But the pandemic gave us the time that we needed to kind of focus on the original stuff. So it's kind of a blessing in disguise, if you ask me. Yeah.
Now you're saying cover band. So growing up, who did you listen to? Who were your inspirations growing up?
John Prine, Kris Kristofferson, you know, the greats that what our dad listened to. Charlie Pride, so many. Yes. Johnny Cash. Yeah. You know.
And then Jewel and Alanis in the 90s.
Yeah. When we reached our teen years, then it was like Sheryl Crow, Alanis Morissette.
So if people are out listening to you, watching you, who's your cover? Who's your favorite to cover besides, of course, your originals, right?
Those favorite ones probably cover that we just said. Yeah. We always have a few John Prine songs in our sets.
Brian Adams. We've got Brian Adams. Yeah.
Lady A. We do love some Lady A.
Nice. Yeah.
We like a nice mix. We like a nice mix.
Now, Throwaway World and Tiny House, two songs we play here on the coast, of course.
Yep.
Fantastic. For the writing part of an original song, who does more of it?
You know what? I think it's...
I started it out. I kind of started it, but I feel like it's totally 50-50 now.
Danielle
line for line with some songs, right?
Danielle definitely started. She had written a handful of beautiful songs, in my opinion, before I even put my hand to it. She was the one who encouraged me. She was like, you know, let's write some music. Let's get some original stuff recorded. And I wasn't sure if I could do it. I'm not going to lie. And I was pleasantly surprised when they were not too... I was like, oh, no, they're not too bad. But you know what? It's funny because the songwriting, the dynamic has changed quite a bit since Danielle has returned back to Cape Breton, because we finally have a chance now to sit in the same room and write together, which is, it's a whole other dynamic, and there's just a new energy that's, it's so exciting, and I'm so grateful to finally be able to do that, because it's been
two brains are better than one, right?
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, we're not going to be hearing Throwaway World live today here in the studio, but I'd love to know more about Throwaway World, because that was your first single. So let's talk about it.
That song was probably the song that we decided was going to be the first song to write on our album, because that was just, I was just saying, our dad used to say, it's a throwaway
and
world.
If people know the words of people the song, know, you mention your dad in it, of course,
yeah,
so that's
they
big
seem,
thing,
they seem to really
for sure.
Like it. Some people can relate to it, right? And that's what we do when we do write. We do try to, even though that was specific for us, we try to keep it relatable to others, you know, kind of keep it open-ended so you can interpret it however way you need to.
Yeah, for sure. So Danielle, I overheard a little while ago that you were building your own home studio.
That is
so true. Has it been done?
It's done. It's done. I'm still in the process of the learning stage, trying to learn the ins and outs so we can do it properly. But that's been quite the fun adventure.
What are your plans?
Plans are to record independently.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's really nice. Yes. An EP was recorded during the pandemic.
It was.
What had to be done for an EP to happen, for an album to happen during the pandemic? Were there any issues or did it take longer or go through that process?
Well, of course. The pandemic happened. So that was tough. The entire EP, it was co-written virtually between Cape Breton and PEI. So of course, you know, we kind of talked on the phone. We used YouTube to, you know, kind of throw pieces back and forth at each other. We partnered with LJL Studios in Cox Heath, and we, you know, when we could, when the pandemic allowed, we would go into the studio in person. You know, we laid the tracks down, we recorded it. Lauren Slaliev and Dave Burke produced it for us, and you know, it's been tough because, you know, with that would have been tough, I think, if we were both even just here in Cape Breton. But with Danielle and PEI, once the interprovincial travel restrictions locked down, like, oh my gosh, the project just dragged on for months and months longer than what we had anticipated. So it was definitely a struggle, but I'm glad to see, you know, we definitely were up for the challenge. You know, we tried to be patient, and it paid off in the end because eventually, you know, we ended up with a beautiful product and a great experience. So.
Let's talk about Tiny House first.
Sure. I'll let Shelley take this one away because she wrote this one.
Yes.
Okay.
This is one of my contributions. So yeah, Tiny House is it's a really fun, feel-good song. It's really just about the joy of simple living. You know, I live in a little bit of a small house. I don't actually live in like an actual definition of like a tiny house. It's not like a, you know, tiny house movement, but I really relate to that. And there's just something really appealing about, you know, living a simple life. And yeah, that was just my little spin on it. It's really fun, really upbeat.
I really want that tiny house. I'm looking for a house right? of my own. I'm like, that would be so sweet.
Hey, less to clean, right?
Yes.
So your CD release is finally happening at Daniels the end of next month, the end of April. And you must be very happy about that.
Hallelujah.
Indeed.
So what will be happening the night of the 29th? What will be happening?
Oh, gosh. We're starting up at 9 o'clock at Daniels. We are going to have Elise Aaron opening up for us. A special performance by my niece and Shelley's daughter, Destiny. Our father is also going to be joining us for one song that we recorded with him. The song is not on the EP. We did kind of like a, it's a Kris Kristofferson cover that we wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's going to be performing.
Okay, so that's who the special guest is.
Oh, we just
quite
gave it
away. Possibly.
We just gave it away.
That might be the special guest.
It is, in fact, the daddy who always says it's a throwaway.
It's
world.
That daddy. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So again, there are 5 songs on your EP.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you have other songs that you've written, though, of course, right?
Yes.
So far, you're looking forward to going back into a studio sometime soon, or are you going to use your own studio for that? Like, what's your plan?
Yeah, we're going to use our studio for that.
Yeah.
We're that's the plan.
That's exciting.
Yeah. We're trying to be independent women here. Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot. Boss women. Well, you two seem to be super busy. You were recently at the Island Folk Cider House, which is right next door to us, pretty much here on George Street. And then you were at the Rockin' Fundraiser for Ukraine. That went really well.
That went really well. We were so surprised by how successful that was. Amazing.
I heard that they raised around 24,000.
That's amazing.
Incredible.
And I heard 29.
Wow.
I think it's just, and they're still collecting donations, still I think. So, yeah, yeah. Amazing. Wow. Great cause.
Where else can people catch you too over the next little bit?
Oh my gosh.
Off the top of my head, what's the.
We have to check the calendar.
How terrible is that?
You know, it used to be very easy to keep track of gigs, but yeah, we've been playing at most of the establishments in the CBRM. We've been very grateful to they always extend us an invitation. Steel City's another.
Oh, you know
one.
What? I probably after this weekend, the 7th, April 7th at the French Club in New Waterford, first hometown show.
That is
so
our
first. If there's
nice.
Any New Waterford hometown
that's
people
special.
Listening, come to the French Club on the 7th.
Yeah, we're actually super excited about that one. So
that's our first time playing. Yeah. Into Waterford,
our very first time.
What about summer plans? I was going to ask, what about summer plans? Anything big coming up?
Yeah.
Can you talk about it a little bit?
We can. They just announced it a couple of weeks ago. We're going to be, we've been added to the lineup at the Kempshore Music Festival in Up the Line. And so we're really excited for that one.
Yes. Yeah. And then we've been invited back to the Acoustic Roots Festival at Two Rivers.
That's near and dear to our hearts, of course. I will be there. That's fun. That's fun. And what's the future like for Hearts of Kin? Like, where do you feel like you're going to go in the next little bit?
Oh gosh, as far as we possibly can.
Yeah, we're just well, that's awesome. Pushing well, on
we're,
through.
We're trying to do some local touring, just of course to promote our debut EP, Homegrown. But as we mentioned, you know, we're constantly writing new music. We're looking at, you know, hopefully releasing more this year. We have a few in mind that hopefully you'll see. I know. Maybe we'll keep it a secret. I don't know. I looked at it like, should we? We didn't.
I already spilled the beans on the special guest.
I know. It's like, how much more? No, but yeah, we're, my gosh, between performing, touring, continually writing new music, it's just, we feel like, you know, we're just getting started. And now that we're finally together, like 2021 was the first year that we could actually, you know, tour consistently, even locally, like, because we, you know, before that, between the pandemic and Danielle living in a different province, it was just, it was impossible. So we're just excited for, you know, all of the opportunities that have been coming our way just because we were available. It's like, you know, it's nice to be able to say, Can you play this show? Yes, we can. We're here.
Yeah.
We're
here. I'm super excited for you too. Yeah, super you so excited. How long does it take for you to come up with a song?
Depends. Some songs are easy. Some songs are harder to.
Of course.
Yeah.
I find if you get some inspiration for a song, you got to put everything aside and sit down and write it.
Yeah, in the moment.
It goes
put
away.
Put it down. Yeah. If you put it down and then come back, maybe it's just not the same vibe you got going on, right? Yeah.
Again, good for you.
Good for you.
That's one of the five songs on your EP.
This is pretty much just about, we've all had that friend who just keeps going back to that person that's not good for them, and you keep wondering why.
I know a couple of people like that.
I think we all do. And that's where the song came from, and it's kind of asking what is it that keeps drawing you back to this person, and it's called Good For You.
So if people go out to Daniel's on April 29th, 7 p.m. start.
Yeah. And 9 p.m.
9 p.m. start.
Later, they have some stuff happening there. I think a jazz festival
is
happening.
Yeah, Daniel's is a happening spot.
So they're going to wrap up and we're getting going at 9 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah.
Local talent.
We'll have some CDs there up for sale. We'll have some merch, probably some t-shirts.
Perfect.
All that fun stuff.
It's going to be a great night.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. We tried. We had a tentative date for early February, but of course, the world shut down on us.
Yeah,
again,
so because you were kind of hoping like 2021 would be sort of where your EP would come out for everyone to hear, right?
And that's right.
Yeah.
So it's been, when we say it's been a long time coming, boy, we're not kidding.
It's
so we're
tough.
Really excited for to celebrate on the 29th.
Yeah. We're going to show it on the 29th. Yes, we're going to show
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
I will show up for sure.
Yes.
Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us today here in the studio. And I think that you should play us out a little bit. Is that okay?
Yes. This is another one from the EP. This one is called Not Done Loving You.
Great.
I can't stop the hands of time from turning every day, but I can take those hands of mine and I can love them in my way. I can't stop the sun from setting when the day is done, but I can sit on your front porch with you until the light is gone. Why can't you stay with me? Daytime turns to nighttime, turns to dawn, back into day. Time keeps on marching on, I swear it's faster every day. Let's not talk about tomorrow, there's not much we need to do. We can cross that bridge if we ever get there, but I'm not done loving you. Stop the rain falling, makes no sense to try, but we can stand and face the showers as they're falling from the sky.
I can't stop the leaves from changing. Seasons come and go, but we can open every window. Feel the breeze and let it flow. Why can't you stay with me this way?
Here, and that means baseball season just around the corner. And a lady that knows a lot about baseball from the Hawks Dreamfield Society, it's Lisa McNeil Campbell. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
It is going to be an exciting time at the field when it's all done, but a lot of work you guys have been doing over the last number of years. And I just seen recently that you just got a bunch of funding from the provincial government. That's a big deal.
Well, we did receive $2 million for the project, so we were super excited.
Can I be your best friend now? $2 million. Wow. That's a lot of work going to be done over the next little bit at the field. Now, take us back. How did this idea come about the Dream Field?
Well, my dad, Walter McNeil, he passed away in June of 2019. And just to make a long story short, basically the family wanted to do something in his honor as a legacy project to help us through the grieving process, but also to do something good for the community because he was all about volunteering and making sure, you know, the community was looked after as part of the Hawks Club in Dominion, the Men's Community Hawks Club. So we gathered a group of very community-minded people and we decided Dad's motto was always everyone gets to play. You can't learn if you don't play. So it didn't matter if you were the best on the field or the worst on the field. You should always have an opportunity to take part. But in order to do that, we had to make the field accessible so that everybody could play. And then we just started fundraising and we've been going. And of course, then we hit COVID and things kind of slowed down a little bit. But no, we're doing super well and we've got beautiful plans for the field. It's going to be absolutely amazing. And it will be for everybody in the CBRM.
So what stage are we at right now as far as the planning goes for the field?
Northern Construction is our company. They are fabulous. They're working right now on all the underground stuff, putting all the piping and the wiring and all that good stuff. And then they'll get the field all leveled and graded and ready for the turf to be put on and for the new grass to be put in the outfield. That's what they're working on now. And then the tenders will go out probably April, early May for the rest of the project, which would be the splash pad, the building, the bocce ball court, all of that great stuff.
And you couldn't meet a nicer guy, and a bunch of folks at Northern Contracting were like Sheldon Marinelli, super nice guy.
Yes, they're great people. And it's so awesome because their workers are really enjoying the project. They love being down there.
Well, good. They're just not allowed to play baseball until the field is done.
Not yet, no.
Okay, so now that leads us to where we are right now, putting a creative competition together for high school students in the CBRM about the Hawks Dreamfield. Tell us a bit about that.
Sure. Because this field is for everybody, we wanted to get the youth involved in the project in some kind of way. And Cape Bretoners are known for their creativity and what they can do. So we thought, what about doing a competition where the high school students, they can come up with their own creativity. So whether they like to write, so write stories or poetry or music, whether they want to sketch or sculpt or paint or any type of creative art, we wanted them to tell us in their own creative way what everyone gets to play would mean to them. Because with the whole project is about accessibility and inclusivity, and being inclusive means different things to different people. So we want to hear from them what it means to them, and we're going to have three different categories, so the written word, music, and art. And there will be a prize of $500 for the winner in each of those three categories. And then we will also have some extra prizes as well, just like for different categories like creativity, workmanship, things like that.
And if folks want to get involved and do this, they have until May 20th, and the winners I see here will be notified by phone. But also, winning entries will be on display at Hecky the Hawk's first birthday party. That's kind of cool.
That is super cool. Hecky, most people know by now, is our mascot for the Hawks Dream Field. Hecky was born with one wing shorter than the other, and he also wears glasses, which is a really big deal for a hawk, of course, because that's how they get their food and how they fly around. So Hecky does have a disability. So Hecky is going to be having his very first birthday party on June 5th at the Dominion Branch 78 Legion. And we're having a huge party for him that we're going to invite all the children in the community to and families to enjoy. They'll be able to have their picture taken with Hecky. And we've got Joker's Wild Entertainment is sponsoring the event. So they'll be coming to with their bounce house and the magic. And we'll have popcorn and cotton candy and hot dogs and all of that great stuff for everyone. We will also be displaying the winners' projects from this competition for the high school students.
And, of course, they can follow you online on your Facebook page and on your webpage. Mm-hmm. And for people that don't know, can you give us that information?
Sure. So the webpage is, it's just actually hawksdreamfield.com. The email address is hawksdreamfield@gmail.com. Facebook page is the same, hawksdreamfield.
And if folks want to get some more information, they can do so a couple of ways. They can email hawksdreamfield@gmail.com. That's all one word. Also, yep. He can give you a dingle as well at 902-574-5461.
Absolutely. We are so excited. And when people realize what's coming, you know, it's not just about a baseball field. There's so much more to this project than just the baseball piece of it. We can't wait for everybody to see when it's all finished and for people to enjoy the walking track, the splash pad for the children and everything, and right next to the beautiful Atlantic Ocean, right next to Dominion Beach there. It couldn't be a more gorgeous place.
So when is the estimated time that this could be completed?
We are hoping and planning on seeing people on the field next spring. It started slow, but it's moving really quickly now, and we do need to give the turf and the outfield grass a year to settle. So once they put that in this summer and fall, then we should be able to play on the field next spring.
That's another reason to have a party.
And we will be having a major party.
All right. Fantastic talking with you here today. Very exciting news here for you and your family and the community as well. Keep in touch with us because we'd like to know where this is going over the next number of months and throughout the year.
For sure. And we'd love to see everybody out at Hecky's birthday party on June 5th. That would be awesome.
Thank you for this, Lisa.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sunday at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-284-NEWS. That's 902-284-6397. Or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcasts, available now online at coastalradio.ca.